Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. Here we are again, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Seems that this happens almost every night lately. It's been over a month now. I want to thank everybody who's been listening and calling in and giving me all kinds of great tips on Facebook and by phone and in emails. I am just overwhelmed with the amount of information that people are giving me. And yet I'm here to say, let's get some more. So if you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number to call is 855-346-3351, 855-346-3351. There's an awful lot going on out in the world today, and one of the things is a renewed look at H.R. 3717, and trying to get more information out about that. Particularly, one of my concerns about this is the Murphy Bill, H.R. 3717, the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. In addition to, this all came about because there was a post about what's going on the website. The website is opencongress.org, and somebody posted this earlier that you could post comments publicly on the Open Congress website about certain legislation, and so I had put up a quick letter that I plan on actually sitting down and writing a letter and doing this all again, but I just put up a quick letter on there to my congresspeople and representatives, who are Kristen Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer and Michael Grimm, and so local politics, yeah. On this website, Open Congress, where H.R. 3717 can be found, 71% of the people who are users of this service on Open Congress support this bill. 10 people who are in favor and 4 people who are opposed. So we should pretty easily be able to push out a clear message on opencongress.org that we are opposed to H.R. 3717. General conversations with people have covered things around losing the alternatives programming and the slashing SAMHSA, slashing protection and advocacy for individuals, PAMI, of people who are psychiatrically labeled, but also this issue of what's going to happen to the veterans, because there's a clause in it that establishes veterans treatment courts and stuff like that. And so I've got all kinds of concerns about it. But area code 810, your line is open.
I'm with you.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Good.
I'm pumped.
This is Loretta, yes?
It is.
Hi. Okay, I wanted to make sure I recognized your voice. So would you give an update as if I didn't know the first thing about what you're talking about so that listeners who may not know where you're at with your phenomenal advocacy work will be on board with you as the story unfolds?
Well, as of last night, I had spoke with an individual that I thought was from the Sparrow Foundation board members. Thought she was one of the board members. And today, going back through things, I learned that she is not. I had requested information from medical records that I had not received, and it's been several requests and several phone calls and emails.
And this is who Sparrow is, right?
Pardon?
And this is who Sparrow is.
Sparrow would be the health system, the records department.
Okay.
The hospital where the majority of my shocks were administered. And I wanted information that showed the documents that I would have been, that I would have signed indicating that I had received, I was giving informed consent. And those documents don't seem to exist. So
that's
I contacted
brilliant.
The foundation. And my email was forwarded to this individual. And she called me last night, and we spoke for about 20 minutes. She got a lot of information from me, but she also gave me some information that I felt was, I didn't say much, but I felt was kind of valuable to me. One of the comments that she did make, and this is in a letter that I just sent out to the foundation just minutes ago, the fact that she requested my medical records from the records department. There is nothing with my signature on it giving the records department at Sparrow permission to send my files to her. And I indicated that, I indicated that in my letter to the foundation that I believe this would be a HIPAA violation if those records leave the department and go into her hands. Because her name is not, I didn't know her until I got this email from her. So I believe that would be a HIPAA violation if they release those records to someone that I didn't give them permission to do, you know, to give. But I have notified the foundation, and I also included the fact that I'm sorry that this lady, this RN, MSN, her titles, her initials, that this lady chose not to call me back within the time frame discussed by her and myself tonight, and that she had now fractured her credibility. And I ask them to please be courteous and respond to my email directly. Do not forward this email to a third party without first notifying me and receiving my permission to do so. And that I will BCC the note to several individuals on my contact list using another email, which I have done. All of you on the list, there's about 24 of us, and I have sent that out to everyone.
Well, I mean, so where's the first, there's the multiple layers of violation that are going on here, right? Cause there's violations of the law, violations of trust, violations of, like, basic human, you know, decency. Wow. So, and this is because you were trying to, and I think that the strategy that you have of requesting what the actual material that you were given as part of the informing process for informed consent was, and that they can't produce that, and that's part of what this problem is, right? That's why they're not giving it to you, because they can't produce it.
I would say that's correct, but I did also request that if those documents do not exist, I needed a statement from them to that effect. And I have not received that either.
Okay, so it's potential, or, I mean, and then some of what they present as factual, like that thing that Sue has been putting together of, responding to the fact versus myth of where they say that the myths are things like that this is, dangerous
well,
to you.
It would not be the same hospital, but it would be another hospital where I did receive shock. That was the first series that was administered to me. It would have been at a Christian hospital in Michigan. They now call it an ECT and TMS clinic.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, they do so much of it, they have a clinic that's what they do.
ECT and TMS clinic?
Yes, ECT and TMS clinic.
Like premenstrual syndrome, PMS.
T as in Tom.
Oh, TM. Okay. Well, still just as bad.
Yes, it is.
Horrible.
What I had done with them is I requested the information, and in the booklet that they sent to me, one of the statements they make, and they call it a myth, is that it is a myth. I want to be precise with it. But I don't want to make a statement that I can't be precise with.
I thank you for taking it apart because I've been watching emails and so for listeners to be able to have it, and then you can also get it in my head the way that it's accurate.
This is what that facility says. It's fact. I mean, this is fact. This is what they say in their booklet. It's a myth that ECT causes permanent memory loss. The booklet goes on to state, studies show that a permanent inability to form new memories is highly unlikely. Some difficulty remembering events surrounding the period of ECT is common, but most of these memories usually return weeks or months after ECT stops. And my note there is they do not address the memories that exist prior to ECT, only that inability to form new memories after ECT is highly unlikely.
Such a crime. And that's just such a fraud. It's just blatantly lying or misinformation or specifically written in that way to obstruct what is actually going on and obfuscate the truth. I mean, this is horrifying. And so was this material from the place where you were subjected to electroshock?
The booklet that I took that statement from is from the hospital, the Christian hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where the first series of ECT were administered to me. That is the booklet. But the booklet was not available prior to 2009. That was the print date.
Right, but even if it was available, it would have been full of lies. And that even
it was a lie.
Later,
yeah, it's a lie. Such
a fraud, and the way that they sell it, and that this is like a product, and that this is people aren't told all of the potential damaging bodily injury, memory loss. How can you say that even a drop of the loss of somebody's memory is not significant? How can anybody say that one's memory and understanding of their own life isn't something that should be of great concern if you know that this thing can wipe it out? And it's torture and it's crime against humanity. And where is the situation out now? So they have, you said the, you called for medical records, but instead of like the medical record department getting back to you, somebody from risk assessment got back to you?
Risk management.
What's
manager
a risk
called me.
What is a risk manager?
I'm not certain. but I have my questions in to her, and my statement to the foundation. So I would like to add on this thing with the statement from the hospital, the Christian Hospital in Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
You heard what I said about they're saying it, stating it's a myth that ACT causes permanent memory loss, and they're addressing that as it's not likely that you would have a problem forming new memories. That's all they're addressing. So, but what the FDA says, what I found in the executive summary, it's a fact, this is fact, and it's taken directly from the executive summary, January 2011. It states that two U.S. manufacturers responded to the request for comment with the following information. Now, that request was when they opened the public docket in 2009, and these manufacturers responded. And they state, the manufacturers state, cognitive adverse events include short-term confusion, short-term memory loss, long-term persistent or permanent memory loss, risk of everyday or semantic memory loss. Then I put a little note in to please define semantic memory loss. And I looked it up, and I had a friend of mine look up the word, and she said it deals with memories, words that you would normally use to form sentences. You would lose track of some of those words and symbols,
right, and
that we might recognize.
Right.
Symbols would have to do perhaps with a sign that on a road sign that said perhaps indicating a bridge out, indicating a curve. These symbols then become mixed and perhaps not even understandable by that person. Symbols. Perhaps a sign that would indicate fire or poison or danger of some sort. Those are symbols that we deal with every day subconsciously, but a person that would have had the ECT has a possible risk of having problems with everyday or semantic memory loss.
Right, because it's been wiped out. It's the way that you remember and understand things, the semantics,
right,
of it. Right.
It
and
gets
so,
mixed up or gone.
Right, and so this idea of even just like not knowing what signs mean and having to relearn all these kinds of things. And
yes.
Maybe not even being aware of what you're not aware of, and not even knowing what you don't know that you once knew because you don't know. It's devastating. It's how any doctor could see this as something that could be beneficial to somebody. Their licenses should be stripped. I mean, it's just do no harm. This is just torture. And so what the FDA is putting out, and what you're saying, Loretta, for, you know, and if you're out there listening, go check this out yourself of what the FDA's hearings from 2009 hearing that was, or
the hearing. It was when they opened the public docket,
and then the hearing was in 11, right?
That's when we actually had. Well, they had some meetings in 2010 as well, late in 2010.
Okay.
Dr. Breeding was one that attended that one. But the docket that opened in 2009, I believe it was in September, and they closed it in January of 2010. And then because of the responses, they continued, they opened and allowed for more comments. And then we had that advisory panel meeting in 2011, January. Some of the statistics that the FDA presented in that executive summary, I'll just try to mention it quickly. They said that during that docket, that open docket, they had 6,462 individuals that responded from the public, and the majority of which were against reclassification of the electroconvulsive therapy device. And then I compiled the notes. This definitely is my compilation of that information. Of the 6,462 individuals that reported and responded, FDA received 1,343 adverse events reports of that 6,462. And of that 1,343 adverse events reports, that included 103 reports of death.
That can be found
in the FDA executive summary. And if you Google, do a Google search, you can type in ECT space 515 and then put a small I in parentheses and a space and then executive summary. And you will be able to read that entire draft, the executive summary draft that the panel had to take into consideration when they were determining what they were going to recommend.
And then they wound up recommending that this thing should remain
a class three experimental device,
right? Everybody except the psychiatrists who were using it or the device makers themselves, right?
Yes.
And the FDA still hasn't, despite that, they still haven't come in with a final assessment of what they're going to do yet, right?
Right. And when recently this year, I think it was in February when I heard and spoke with the ombudsman and the deputy ombudsman, they sent me an email stating that the FDA would be opening more public dockets to receive more information on this device. And why they need more, I don't know. They had an overwhelming...
What more do they need?
What more
does this government need? At the same time, these are the same people that are involved in every other major scandal that is getting attention from the world, right?
This is
so corrupt. It is so criminal. And it's organized and it's intentional and it's a great profit to these industries and a great loss to anybody subjected to it. I don't even know what to say, but I can tell you that I think we have a question coming in here, and I have two lines open. Area code 503, your line is open. If I'm not sure if you wanted to jump in or if sometimes the...
Hi, this is Deborah calling from Oregon.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
Hi, Lauren. Good, thank you. Was that Dorothy that was just talking? I came in late.
No, that was Loretta.
I was just going to say that anytime risk management gets involved, they're concerned about legalities. And in her situation, from what part I heard of it, that she should just go ahead and report them to the Office of Civil Rights at this point, because she's not getting what she wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I did attempt reporting to the Office of Civil Rights, you know, the federal, and they informed me that they don't take reports of this nature.
For medical records?
That's what they told me.
Huh, because that's who I used.
Yeah, and that's why I called them.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, they turned me down flat.
Did they refer you to someplace else that would help
No,
you?
They did not. No, they just said that they do not do that kind of thing. I shouldn't say they did not. I think they referred me back to reporting to the FDA stuff, you know.
So, that's strange because that's one of their main jobs is medical records.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering the situation with the Sparrow, you reported that to the Office of Civil Rights and they refused that?
Are you talking to me?
Yes,
Lauren?
Loretta. Yeah.
I called them and asked them how I could find out about these medical records. I told them that I had not received what I had requested. And they said, I'm sorry, but we don't take those kind of reports.
What state are you in,
Loretta? Michigan.
You're in Michigan?
Yeah.
Well, I'll call them tomorrow. I'm curious now. I'll let you know, Loretta.
Good.
That's great, because I think that this is the thing. Either it varies state to state, or it's by person or person, or if they're in the mood to do it. Or,
agency,
you know.
You think it would be pretty consistent.
Well, can I just say that I really believe that this RN was definitely fishing, because at one point she asked me, she said, so are you an advocate against ECT?
Yeah.
And I said, I am an advocate for the truth. That was my response to her.
Wrong answer.
Truth.
Why would she even ask you something like that? I mean, you're just trying to get your medical records, right? And why is she the person that medical records is sending? I mean, that's the first violation, right? You're requesting medical records, and they have somebody from risk management calling you?
Yes.
That's none of their business. Would they do that for another type of patient, for a medical patient? Would they sideline them?
Anytime. I think in Michigan, if you even hint that you want a copy of a medical record or something from your chart, they say it's a red flag, and they believe that you're looking at a lawsuit. And I brought this to her immediately. I said, you're probably thinking this might be in looking at a lawsuit. I want you to know that the statute of limitations has long passed. It's been better than almost 14 years since the last shock treatment was administered. So this is not about a lawsuit. This is about me obtaining my medical record that I have a right to, if indeed that record exists.
How far back did the record go?
The records, I have these records all the way back beyond, well, at least back to 93 when the first shocks were administered.
And when was the last one? Last
2000.
All right, so they should still have them then.
Oh, they're still there.
Yeah.
They also don't have them, or may not have easily to produce, or may have exactly what they had you sign as quote-unquote consent and don't want to give it up because of the way that they will be held liable for that, you know, one way or another. But, I mean, I think that this is a brilliant strategy of trying to get the information that they gave you at the time. And, you know, and then being able to do this, like, even though it was almost a decade later of that pamphlet you were talking about, just the lies, the absolute lies, and the misrepresentation of what they're doing is something that is not going to be harmful to people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does it say anywhere in there?
One other note can I say on this? I have informed them that I said in my note, it's in front of me here, FYI, due to impaired memory resulting from ECT, I do record phone calls that I consider to be important. And I did record the phone call with her because I don't want to misquote her and I don't want her to be able to misquote me. So that is on my recorder.
Right. And I think that they, you know, they need to be held accountable for what they're doing. And it would be interesting to know whether or not that issue with the Office of Civil Rights is by state it varies, or if it's just some misunderstanding about what their responsibilities are where you're at. But, I mean, even like, maybe a lawyer may be a good, you know, trying to get at this
mm-hmm.
point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are there any lawyers in, you're in Michigan, right? Any
Michigan.
Lawyers in Michigan?
We don't have any, I wouldn't say that there would be any around here that would get involved, because most everybody around here doesn't even believe this is even going on.
But I had to get an attorney just to secure my medical records, because they wouldn't give me what I was asking for.
Yeah.
So there are general attorneys that will get them for you.
Okay.
But it's just expensive. And you shouldn't have to do that. That's the point.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
HIPAA should step up.
Right. And that's what the Office of Civil Rights is supposed to help.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I wasn't talking as much about a lawyer to get your medical records as I was to sue them for HIPAA infringement.
That's what happens when the Office of Civil Rights gets involved. Once they do a formal investigation, then they either sanction them or, you know, they do something to them for withholding records if they find them at fault.
Okay.
I think it's definitely worth taking another look at. Area code 914, your line is open.
Hi, Lauren. This is Emily.
Hi, Emily. I hope all is good. Loretta and Deborah, I hope that you all stay on the line. And Emily, what's up? You have something right on this also, right?
Yes, I actually pulled up the HIPAA. It's under HIPAA for the medical records. And the Office of Civil Rights is responsible for conducting any investigations for complaints. If you type in the Google search bar HIPAA and request for medical records, it'll come right up, and it'll tell you what your rights are. They have to give you your medical records. They can't deny you. That is, you can certainly file under Health and Human Services, and if you go under Health and Human Services, that's for any state. The other thing is they can impose a fee for copying. I know in New York, if you tell them you can't afford it, they have to give it to you, one copy for free. That may vary from state to state. But as far as I just read, they must give it to you. It doesn't matter what state you live in. And if they don't give it to you, or if they give you a problem, you certainly have a right to file with the Office of Civil Rights, and that's under the Department of Justice.
Okay.
I just wanted to call in and let you guys know that.
So just a comment on the records. Basically, I have all of my medical records. The problem is the informed consent forms that should have been signed by me are not in those records. The permission to have students observe the treatments are not in the records. I'm looking for the documents with my signature giving them permission. That's what I'm looking for.
I had a hard time getting my actual consent. That was what they held on to the longest. And at one point I was even told, as they rushed by me and they were agitated with me at this point, once again, they said, well, most likely it was a verbal consent. And I said, well, it involved general anesthesia, so I certainly hope not. And then they produced the consents. But that's what they'll hold on to that, I think, the very end. For whatever, I think because they're so afraid of possible litigation because they're not telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
As far as missing documentation, I know I was looking it up. Unless, like, you can prove that they lost it on purpose or there's some damage to you, if you put in a complaint to the Office of Civil Rights, there's really not much they can do about that. I know for myself with the recent experience that I had with the hospital, I actually got them on a voice message saying that they lost my document, that they lost my medical records. That's one thing that you have to actually get them to do, is actually admit to it. Otherwise, if you don't have them, like, admitting to it, or you don't actually have damages to your own personal life, from my own personal research, there's not much that the Office of Civil Rights can do for your complaint. You can still certainly, obviously, put in the complaint, but that's just from my own personal research of looking this up.
Well, I'm interested in them letting me know if I was educated. If I was not educated, I want them to just give me, say, no, you didn't receive the education. Your family didn't receive the education. None of my family has said they were educated about this. So it would have had to only be me if I was. And I'm really pushing for, because I want to use this eventually here to push for a really strong informed consent when it comes to this kind of treatment in Michigan. Pages of informed consent like Texas rather than, I mean, that what I have from Texas was an exhibit of what they hope to have. I'm not certain that I have the actual document for informed consent.
And I think that this is a really important piece of making sure that the consent process is full and complete. And, you know, were you given the information, and do they have evidence that you consented to it? And, you know, I think that this is, you know, and then what was it that you were given as that information? And when you compare what they were giving a decade after you were subjected to this or more and the lies that they were putting out, then people aren't really giving informed consent because they're consenting to a series of lies. And so that also seems to be one of the biggest sources for potential litigation, but I'm not a lawyer, but it just seems to me that that's a major part of the problem. And then whoever mentioned also then the consent for general anesthesia, which carries an inherent risk of death, like, you know, so where are those files? And, you know, and the idea that it's at risk management, of course, is part of, you know, the complicating factor, I guess, on some levels. So, Emily, thank you for calling in with that and the information. And, Deborah, I look forward to see if you do get in touch with them and if they have any recourse at this point.
Yeah. I'm interested.
And, Deborah, I'm just wondering if... Since you're online, would you just tell people about the survey that you're doing through ectjustice.com?
Yeah, I'm trying to gather information from ECT survivors on their experience around consent, if they felt they received adequate information, what they felt was lacking in the consent process, and what they were left with as a result of having ECT, such as memory impairment, cognitive problems. I'm just trying to get a database built up around those, mainly those two things.
And I have responded to that. I did fill that out.
Yes, I saw that, Laura. I saw that. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Thank you. I know one issue I have with consent, at least at Kaiser, they consent you for a series because they realize the potential to sign consent after that point is pretty much moot. But I got the lady's records from Utah, and I was reading her medical records, her consent. And she was doing ECT three times a week, and they were consenting her for every single ECT and every single anesthesia procedure that was done for ECT. And I know full well in between every 48 hours, you're certainly not cognitively ready to sign mm-hmm. another consent.
Impossible.
And, all they would say is alert and orientated at time of consent, mm-hmm. which I think is BS because I know, you know, in the middle of my ECT treatments, you know, the day in between or even the day of the next one, you know, I thought I was in Vegas. You know, I couldn't find my way into my own bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how they're getting away with people signing these consents in this state. So, but they don't, you know, that's why it's so important to get the notes 24 hours around the ECT that would document it more effectively.
Well, my husband, his major complaint was that to them, and this is documented in my record, that he complained about the fact that he didn't understand why this was considered a good thing for me, because every time I had a treatment, I had to be totally reacclimated to my surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no knowledge of apparently of my own home and the area, how to get around or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Each time that would happen. And they said that he was assured that this was temporary and that the memories would return.
Lies.
Such a fraud. And this is why people say that this is a crime against humanity. This is torture. How many more people are we going to do this to as a society? Without at least giving them the ability to make an informed decision with informed choice. Like, you know, how much longer are we going to continue this as a society? I just think it's so terribly problematic. Line 202, your line is open.
Yes, this is Yvonne Smith. If for some reason the Office of Civil Rights in Michigan said no, this is what I would do. I looked on the HHS site, and it says clearly if you cannot get your records that you report to the U.S. government, but they don't say what agency. I would suggest that you make a request to your congressional office to get your that you would like a complaint to be filed, and then they can have it filed with the necessary agency, whether it's HHS, whether it's DOJ or whatever. But that's what I would do. I wouldn't pussyfoot around with them about it because that's what risk management is. They are protecting some financial loss. That's why she asked you if you were an advocate. They probably have some kind of little flow chart with these questions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And from you answering what she said, were you an advocate? You are an advocate, but anyone trying to get their records, they should ask the person, I am the individual, and I want my records. I've made a request in mm-hmm. writing. And that is it. And then because they are trained, they go to classes and stuff to protect the institution.
Mm-hmm.
And some institutions actually are exempt, and a lot of people don't know it. Some of your state agencies, even schools, employers, other people are exempt from these from HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would recommend is to I have not on health information, but on other items I have asked. I don't have a voting delegate. We have just a representative where I live, but I have found that if you go to your or either write to your congressman's office, they usually have a constituent person, and they divide issues up. And once they get a letter from a congressperson's office, they respond very quickly.
Okay.
Because it should be the Office of Civil Rights, but it may be, it may be the way you framed it. Like I said, they go to trainings, and when they ask you that additional question, that seemed to me is that training is kicked in, and they were saying that they don't take complaints because clearly on the HHS website, at HHS.gov for HIPAA, it clearly says that they point you in the direction of the provider, but it also has examples of organizations that do not have to follow these rules.
This is what HIPAA is about, isn't it? Protecting doctors and hospitals?
Yep. It's supposed to be to protect the But, you know, sometimes, it's been a while since I've been to a HIPAA training myself, and one of the things that when I did go to training that made me very curious is a lot of times, sometimes people understand certain parts of these records are not ours. They belong to the institution. It's all about them releasing the information without our consent. So they wouldn't be releasing information, but getting your own records shouldn't be a problem. That is clearly listed in HIPAA, that you have a right to get your own information.
Yes.
But the risk manager, that's what clearly their job is to prevent. They're supposed to also be looking at adverse situations that might happen to a patient. But bottom line is most of the time, it's an insurance
But they're
function.
Not doing that. They're not doing that. They're protecting the organization. They're protecting the state.
Right,
they're protecting themselves.
Financial loss. And that's all that they are looking at, because even though it was 10, you say the statute of limitations has passed for you, they're thinking about the people that they're still doing this with. Because they're still doing ECT there, right, Loretta?
Yes, they are.
So they're still
doing
it.
Yes, and they are still training students from the Michigan State University there.
They would lose revenue by not doing it, and they, even though the statute of limitations has expired for you, it has, and that's still no reason to. That's why I would go directly to. I would frame it very tightly, not putting. You know, you can put if you want to, but I wouldn't put anything about, you know, ECT then, forward crime and all that stuff. I would just put in, I want my medical records. I need to know what had transpired and what happened to me, and I need those records for what, just say you need them. Because when they start thinking that they're going to get an avalanche of people getting their medical records, and there might be news at 11.
Right. And Deborah,
so.
you had on the ECTjustice.com website, you have a whole slew of tips for people about how to approach this issue and not necessarily flag them that you're going to be going in for litigation or that your purpose is for litigation.
Yeah, because a month consent or request for medical records that have what reason do you want your medical records, personal, legal, or then there's another one, I can't remember what it is now, but I would suggest just putting personal. When I first started trying to get my records, you know, they initially just took my pharmacy records.
Are you on a speakerphone by any chance, or, sorry? There's some feedback. Okay, yeah, because there's some feedback coming in.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, okay, so what did I come across at all?
Yeah, no, if you could just repeat what you were just saying.
Okay. What I was saying is when you get your medical records, there's a part of it that says for what reason do you want your records, and it'll say personal or legal, and there's one other
situation also, but I can't remember what it is. And I would always suggest that you put personal. And even in trying to get my records initially, it didn't really raise any red flags because I wasn't certain exactly what I was looking for when I first started out because I was just fresh out of detox and I was, you know, just starting to figure things out. So, but later on, risk management did get involved. And so that's where we come from.
When I explained to her yesterday evening, she had asked me about the records, and I explained to her that this is for my personal record and to help my children understand, to help my family understand what happened to me and why so much of my memory is gone.
Mm-hmm.
This is for my personal record and for my children.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually asked me, are your children having to go through this treatment? And I said, no, actually they would probably stay as far from it as they can because of what they saw me go through.
Mm-hmm. So that would might flag her right there.
Yeah.
You know, with that.
Yeah.
I would just say very concise with risk management. You know, I wouldn't go into details. I would just say, I'm just here for my records. You know, it's for personal reasons, and that's all I'm going to say. And I insist on having my records.
Yeah.
Right.
The question I have for the foundation, and it's only four short lines here. For what reason did you involve Ms. Jennifer, I better not say the whole word, risk manager, when my request has nothing to do with risk management and everything to do with medical records specific to the documents that would have been signed by me indicating that I and or my family had been educated about the adverse events risks of ECT and that I was giving informed consent to be treated with electroconvulsive therapy?
And just
I'm asking, I sent that letter tonight. I mean, that will be in their email. It's there.
First thing in the morning, yes.
Yes.
I want to just interject for 1 second and say, area code 617, your line is open if you'd like to talk and get involved in the conversation.
Well, it's Dorothy here. I'm sorry, I just got home from work, and I'm listening at this point.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Dorothy.
I'm just listening because I just got home from work, and I'm getting up to date on what's happening in the conversation, but I'm listening very carefully.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. I just wanted to let you know because I've been having some technical issues with the one not necessarily working. So I didn't know if it was on or not, but at any point, just feel free to jump in.
What do I do to mute my phone until I want to unmute it?
Oh, I will. I'll just put it. I'll put it on mute on this side. And when you want to jump in, just hit one. Okay.
Just hit one. Okay. Great. Thank you.
So I think that you know part of it is trying to get what is within our rights to get concerning medical records. And then part of it is the absolute lack of respect that is given to people in this process and the complete violation of trust and the lack of decency. I mean, I think on a personal level, Loretta, you had mentioned that, you know, she said that she would be calling you back and then she didn't. And, I mean, hopefully that nothing terrible happens that prevented her from being able to do that. But the idea that people are just dispensable and, you know, don't need to be responded to, I think is another whole issue around the way that we're treated. But this the lies, the outright lies and the, you know, FDA says these 10 things and those 10 things are not clearly given to each person that is involved with this, it's such a violation.
It's a severe violation.
And I think in getting your records back, I think it's taking some of your power back. You know, I had that sense when I was able to achieve that, that they didn't have that over me anymore.
Yes.
You know, it's a step. I mean, if more people would get their records, I mean, it might scare them enough to, you know, think all of a sudden, why are all these mental health patients coming forward getting their records? You know, it might make them a little bit more cautious and, you know.
Right.
You know, there's a letter from the Office of Civil Rights from Leon Rodriguez explaining all this. And I don't know if this would be helpful to this lady or not, but I'm going to send the link to you, Lauren, and I'm going to put it on my Facebook page because I think that that might help if when people make the request that they attach this letter from, which is initialed, from the Department of Health and Human Services Office Secretary, and it says message from Leon Rodriguez. So it clearly states what the rights are. It says you should know you have the right to ask to see and get a copy of your health records from most doctors, hospitals, and other health care providers such as pharmacies, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
That might be helpful.
I will forward that to you. Thank you. Thanks, Yvonne. Loretta, I'll forward it out. And you know, and I think also, Loretta, you've been working so hard with John Breeding and others in putting together this booklet on informed consent that would really actually give accurate, true information about what people were being involved with. And I think it's just such a great effort that you're undertaking, and the idea of being able to use, if not, you know, legally, then legislatively, what it is that you've been through to try to prevent others from having to go through this, and being able to use how little information you were given in making this decision as a reason as to why everybody needs full informed consent and choice, I think is just amazing. And so I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about In the Gray.
Well, for one thing, I address it, this booklet. For one thing, is as gray matter does matter. And I've added a couple of quotes. I don't have it up in front of me at this moment. But the booklet was kind of came out of some, I call it the gray zone because, for one thing, or shadow memories, where they seem to be there, and as soon as you try to tap into them, you realize they're not there. This feeling of memories being there and not being able to get a hold on it. And so I titled this booklet that this is not to be confused with the booklet that we're working on. You know, this information on that hospital and the FDA information, the fact and the fact.
Mm-hmm.
It is not to be confused with the booklet that we are working on to get this information into the hands of the public, into the doctor's offices across this country and maybe even around the world in, you know, multi-language print. But I would like to see it combined with this information where both are incorporated, presenting some facts about electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, entering the gray zone. And it's for educational purposes, booklet designed with you in mind. And that's the front cover. And the picture of the brain that's on the cover is something that I drew myself. And then printed it in. I did it with color pencils and then printed it out in black and white. So
okay.
it's not something that was done in in a lab where people would take pictures and really graphics. It was not it's not something that was designed in a graphics studio. That is something I designed myself. So the booklet, I'm very, very happy with how it's looking. I mean, the progress. I think it's just tremendous. And it's using the same theme. The booklet would be using the same theme. But let's see, I had it in my hand here. It might be under my little... Yeah, I don't see it right off the bat. Here it is. With the information that Dr. John Breeding is providing, I think if we can incorporate that with what I have, the facts from the FDA and this hospital, I don't think this is specific to the hospital. I think it's general across the country, this attitude of myth about these things that, you know, that ECT causes. I don't think it's, for just that hospital, although they're the ones that prepared that, but it was printed, the book was printed, I have that in the booklet.
Right, and that this is common across the country and across the world. This is the kind of fraud that's perpetrated on people.
The kind of fraud, yes. Even though I'm using that particular hospital, I think you could change the name, and it would have the same meaning for any hospital in any ECT clinic or whatever across the country or around the world. They're
right.
Telling people this is not. That we are lying to them. They're telling them that this is not how it is, that it's a safe procedure, it doesn't cause all these problems, and it's very deceitful. It's deception all the way.
Right, and then you have people who say that, you know, that you're not credible if you say that this isn't therapy, this is torture, or that this is a crime against humanity, and that, you know, that somehow people who have been subjected to this, who are speaking out against it, are not to be believed, are not to be taken seriously.
I'm actually working on a visual of the state of Michigan. And I have taken the names of the cities all around Michigan, and the population, and I'm going to do a visual to show what it would look like to have 100,000 people have just one series. I'd like to see it go as a series. Take 100,000 people. Times one. And I want to show what it would look like on the map. If you took these little cities and said, okay, everybody in your city is going to go today and receive a shock treatment. I want to show the numbers in something that people can comprehend. And it's massive. You would not believe the number of cities that I have listed that it would show these, and they're going to say, well, that's insignificant, but that's exactly what we're talking about, the treatment. We are treated as, our reports are treated as insignificant. We don't know what we're talking about. That's
right.
What they want to treat us that way. They want to look at us as, well, we're not trained. We don't have the certificate on the wall. Therefore, we are discredited. And the FDA is discrediting us all the time. They only want to talk to the manufacturers and the doctors and people who seem to have some credibility. But this picture would show all these, and don't tell me, I mean, if you look at this 100,000 people, that would be located all over the state of Michigan, Michigan would not want to lose those insignificant little cities because many of them have massive farms that produce for the state of Michigan and all over the country. Don't tell me that they're insignificant, and we're not insignificant either. Our story counts for a lot. Everybody needs to tell the story and speak up about how they've been treated.
You are so powerful. I think that is that we are not anecdotes. We are not people that should be able to be discredited. And the way you just said that, it is so inspiring. And I hope if you're out there and listening, that you also will speak out and, you know, in your daily life, do something to let people know what's happened and get involved in stopping this on a large scale.
Yeah.
There are tens of millions of us. What would happen if, and even when you say 100,000 people, what was it, Loretta, you said before, out of 6,000 respondents, there were
a little over 6,400 responses. There was reports in the over 1,300 responses of adverse reports of adverse events. That number included 103 deaths.
Yeah. And that's only what's reported in this to the mm-hmm. FDA. That's not even counting what they're really doing. And there are hundreds of thousands of people are subjected to this, millions of people worldwide. And I thank you for your strength in speaking out against this and educating people about it and inspiring them and continuing to find creative mm-hmm. ways. I think the idea of this, you know, a small town, being then seen somehow as not credible, I think that's great imagery, and it really is very powerful.
Those are some of our biggest farms, the farm owners are in those little towns in Michigan. And those farmers are very important to the state of Michigan.
And we are very important. Right, that we're not disposable. We're not less than human. And people who are psychiatrically assigned and subjected to this torture need to be respected and listened to, and we need to stop putting profit ahead of people. And I like the idea of whoever mentioned it, if enough people started demanding their medical records would be dealt with in a different way. Once it all goes electronic, it's going to be an even further different way. But to demand to know what it is over time that you were consenting to, where is the consent if it was done with consent?
On the back of this little booklet that I have prepared, and Lauren, I sent you the Word document, an attachment this afternoon late. I don't know if you were able to get that. On the back cover, at the bottom where I put 2014, I put a quote, and it says, "An investment in knowledge pays the best interest." And my comment then is, please consider the booklet to be my investment in your well-being. And the other, on the front of it, where I said gray matter does matter, the quote there is, "The goal of education is the advancement of knowledge and the dissemination of truth." And that was by John F. Kennedy.
Which is surreal, because he had Jackie electroshocked, and it's surreal that he is the same person and that the Kennedys, with all of their support for community mental health services, had no problem having the women of their family electroshocked and lobotomized. And, you know, but this idea of what true truth is, right, and true information of how to go about doing these major changes, and that people's rights should just be respected, and that is as simple as that, and protected, and that you shouldn't have to sit and try to figure out explaining why you want your medical records. You want your medical records. It shouldn't even be a question. It should just be, you know, would you like that single or double sided? Like that's,
yes.
you
yes.
know, that's.
Absolutely.
So I think that these are continued efforts to keep on going, and I want to just point people. You had mentioned John Breeding before, and I want to just point people to the website endofshock.com, and that's where you can also find the electroshock quotationary by Leonard Roy Frank, and a wealth of other information. And psychrights.org has a also a wealth of information on electroshock, and then Deborah, if you're still on ectjustice.com, is another place where people can reach out for information and also to fill out that survey about that they're collecting for adverse effects of electroshock, if that's right.
Yes.
Okay. So I think that this is really, really crucial. And, you know, at the same time, there's, like, bills in New York State, for example, that just passed in the Senate and the Assembly that would do they changed the definition of postpartum depression, the legislature did, and they now call it maternal depression. And they're saying that it can start, it doesn't necessarily start at the end of pregnancy, but can actually go back, and evidence of it during pregnancy is panic and anxiety. And so they're investing all of this money into doing screenings on all women in New York who are pregnant or who have just had children, and on their children. But I worry about electroshock with women who are pregnant because NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, promotes the use of electroshock on women who have been diagnosed with bipolar who are pregnant. And because of all the known effects of drugs on fetus, on a developing fetus, then the promotion of the use of electroshock on women who are pregnant is also another whole very, very concerning area, and I'm not sure if any of you have any specific information about that or what or any ideas about it, but because this bill just came out in New York, like, the other day, like, it was, you know, proposed and went right through with seemingly no hesitation, I'm very concerned about it. So I'm just wondering if any of you have any ideas about that?
I would just, for myself, seeing the video that that hospital, that Christian hospital, provided me, the DVD of an actual treatment that they did there. Watching how the legs of this man were watching the movement, okay? Knowing that man had been given anesthetic and muscle paralyzers. By the way, when I say muscle paralyzers, I think we should refer to it that way. For my own self, I know that atropine was the drug of choice in my case. And I know that atropine can bring quick death. if it is over, they have to have an antidote there to immediately administer it if they feel that they've done too much. So it is a very high risk. Anything that goes into the mother's bloodstream to anesthetize her is going to have the same or a very much stronger effect on the baby. Any shock that where she has to have paralyzers to keep her from receiving injury is going to do the same thing to the baby. And so I think it's a tragedy. It's horrific that they would consider doing shocks to a young pregnant mom. Yeah, to a pregnant teenagers usually. I mean, they're 18, 16, 15. What age?
I mean, I'm just looking at the NAMI website now, NAMI.org, someplace I would not recommend getting any factual information from. But what they say about for women with labeled with bipolar, they say, quote, when used in women who are pregnant, ECT may pose fewer risks than untreated mood episodes or treatment with medications known to be harmful to fetuses. Complications of ECT during pregnancy are uncommon. Monitoring heart rate and oxygen levels of the fetus during ECT can detect most problems, and medications are available to correct difficulties. Though some birth defects, developmental delays, or mental retardation have been described in the children of women who underwent ECT while pregnant, there is not a number or pattern of these reports to suggest a relationship to ECT. It is very important for pregnant women who undergo ECT to stay nourished and hydrated to help prevent premature contractions. Intubation or antacids may also be used to decrease the risk of gastric regurgitation or lung inflammation during anesthesia for ECT.
Wow.
And this is specifically for women. The name of the page is Managing Pregnancy and Bipolar Disorder.
The idea that they would want to intubate somebody for ECT lets you know they're concerned enough about the oxygenation of that baby or that fetus that they would have to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, what a crime. What an absolute. So now with this law that's going to screen every woman in New York State who's pregnant and put in screenings, through the OBGYN and family doctors and general practitioners, all the way up through, early childhood, and what they're also saying will help identify early childhood, emotional disturbances in the children of these women who wind up getting, because if you have panic or anxiety while you're pregnant, that's clearly a sign of maternal depression. And how the legislature is allowed to just identify a psychiatric label like that. Like, the legislature is allowed to make the definitions for what maternal depression is?
That's why it's so important that Loretta Booklet to get to those OBGYN offices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, and then how do you combat, NAMI raked in $500,000 in the first quarter of 2014 from pharmaceutical industries and the behavioral health companies and, and they're a front. And so how do you compete where you have people putting together brilliant things and sharing their strength for having survived these things against this machine? And so that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful for you all for calling in and for talking about it and for all the work that you're doing, because I feel like every which way that we can try to get to the general public, we must. And especially the people who are going to be subject to it next in line and having materials available in waiting rooms. And I'd like to see them held legally accountable, Loretta.
Yes.
I mean,
that
material that you're talking about, not the gray matter pamphlets that you're putting together, but that fraud that is what is being presented to people as what is truth and what is myth, Like, they should be held legally accountable for that.
Right. Right. This, and if that's what they presented to me, when I was drugged, there's, I can see, and plus the fact that I was raised in church. So the idea of it being a Christian hospital was a very strong influence. And if that was presented to me, that information, as it's okay and this is a really good thing for you, and I don't believe that I had the truth. I know a gentleman that had grandma seizures, and it was a horrific sight as a teenager for me. I don't have all the details. I can't actually see it. I just have that feeling that it was horrific as I watched what was happening with him. But ECT induces an instant. I mean, seizures come on gradually for the most part. Grandma seizures are the worst of the seizures, affecting the whole brain. They come on gradually, and the individual begins to contort. An ECT causes an instant reaction and violent reaction, and that's why so many broken bones and teeth and jaws. But then the anesthetics come out, and they say, well, now it's safe. No, the same or even greater power and longer duration for the electricity passing through to obtain the same strength or the same effect of the seizure as what they would have done. They would have given them far less when they didn't use the anesthesia. And so now we have...
It's like any other, like, addiction kind of thing. You need more because you're adding more and you
yes,
have more
you have
to
have more to make
you've
it work.
You've got all these other drugs that you've got to get over on top of also, right?
Right.
What a crime.
I mean, they gave me ECT on 25 milligrams of a benzodiazepine a day, and that's what's used to stop seizures. So you know this seizure threshold had to be quite high to be able to induce a seizure.
And then how it's like goofballs almost. You know what I mean? Like you're doing something that stops something and then adding something that starts it, and that's got to be like doing, you know, uppers and downers at the same time, for example. You know what I mean? Like that's dangerous just in itself. Like not even counting what the actual reality of it is, but having something, I mean, how a medical doctor can rationalize this as medicine and as something that is helpful or beneficial or something that should be done when all we're ever trained is to stay away from electricity. Electricity is dangerous. And, you know, for people...
The reason why I believe that... they go through such extreme measures is because they themselves have been brainwashed. It's, as I spoke about earlier, part of last week about going to a grand round, what happens is they have portrayed this emotional distress that people are in to be sort of like a plague or like a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So just like in cancer, they give people radiation and chemotherapy to kill cells. They feel justified. And the stuff is repeated enough times in medical schools and medical journals by their peers that it's almost like that they themselves believe it. And what they say is that they only give ECT in the most extreme cases, but I think that it's because they have repeated it so long. You know, if no one calls you on something and people keep repeating it, then they themselves start believing it, you know, and other people do too. I mean, they just start believing that. So they feel as though that the person is in such bad shape that anything that they could do to arrest, have the potential to arrest their symptoms.
Right, but that's fraud, because that's not how it's used.
Even if that is how it's used,
that is the bigger crime. To say that all the way up until the point that somebody can't speak to themselves, they have the opportunity to say no, and then once you don't have the ability to speak to yourself, that's the point that we're allowed to force you. But, I mean, that to me is an even bigger crime than any other part of it. I mean, they have no legitimacy.
This is how they propagate. That's just how they propagate that these things are safe. I mean, if you've seen anything on television where they talk about the ECT, and I've seen many of these, pay attention, they'll say, well, this is not the ECT that you had 25 years ago. You know, they don't say that they do not speak about the people's memory loss being permanent, like the people that you have on your show, Lauren. They talk about some people might have some minor loss. And as you said, who puts a value on whether knowing that when your son was born or your own wedding or whatever, who can put a value, say that whatever instance of a less value, because they cannot guarantee. I wish they could take away all the traumatic things, the trauma-related things that happened to me, but they don't have a process to do it. But I'm just saying this is the way that they propagate it, and there's no one else out here giving the truth about the fact that there's a high instance of loss of memory. And they repeat it long and hard enough, and just as Loretta was saying, even to get information, because I perceive that what the risk manager was trying to guard against was that Loretta would get lots of information and would be used not necessarily for a lawsuit for her case, which is past the statute of limitation, but somehow this would be informative to other people who want to get ECT. And these people that block stuff like this, I don't think necessarily that they're truly evil. They just believe it because they've heard it long enough and no one has said it. And they said, who are we? Who is Loretta to say that this is a bad thing when I've got 10, 15 doctors who've got 25 years of schooling who tell me that this is a safe procedure?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the danger of it.
Well, we have to try to do is to get the booklet in a very professional format, and it has to have some credibility, not just the fact. I mean, obviously we can give our testimonies, but when people are in crisis, they don't want to hear how well you've done or how bad you've done. They need help. They need
they
this
need
information.
Please.
I'm sorry. We need credibility with this booklet. We have to have the references where this information has been obtained. I think the FDA is a fantastic source because of the manufacturers reporting to them, and they've put it in print, the response from the manufacturers. It's fact that the manufacturers reported this. It's fact that the hospital reported this. Who's right? Who's the most believable? And the FDA reports are from public reporting on adverse events.
Right.
But the hospital says it's okay. So who's credible? We have to discredit. We have to discredit their information in a way that it adds credit to what we're putting out.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, there is, and people should know, there is so much information about the damage that electroshock causes, even down to Sackheim, you know, reversing his decades of being a proponent of it and saying, no, it does in fact cause memory loss. And I think that was in 2008. And so that they have been successfully manipulating the way that people are informed about electroshock for decades. And I think that this idea of this booklet of creating a different consent process for people and reaching people who may be subject to it is so important. I just want to give out the phone number if people want to call in and ask questions or share their own experiences. It's area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, that's area code 855-346-3351, 855-346-3351. Yeah, and if you're holding online, and I'm going to just open up the lines again just in case anybody wants to speak because of the difficulties with the technology here.
Lauren?
Yes.
This is Dorothy. What I really wanted to say is that one of the biggest problems is when people are just about to have the shock, they're in the least possible position to make any kind of rational decision about whether to have it or not. And so that to me is the biggest problem that we have of all, that if you present them with a booklet, you know, when they're about to be having the shock, they're feeling so completely horrible that they can't possibly even read the booklet. That's my main concern, of being able to reach these people way before they're at that point. They become educated. This kind of information has to be out there. It has to be really widespread public information so that, in fact, if a family member gets to the point where they're actually going to be told they need shock, that people are educated before it's too late.
Educate prior to crisis. This is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, because when you're feeling that depressed that you're going to be signed up for shock, you're not going to be able to read a booklet or make any kind of decision on it. Basically, there is no such thing as informed consent as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's a really, really important point, and that's part of why, again, getting to the general public about this. I mean, in my mind, if you put up what Loretta and John Breeding and others are doing in that booklet versus the typical information that somebody's given in an informed consent process, it's almost like a, you know, here you go. There's no reason for this to ever be used at all, and that the government needs to take this off. And if there was a way to create public pressure about it through the truth and through the general information that people would have access to, I think that's so important. So when somebody is at that point, why are you going to wait until somebody's at that point to give them information about when, you know, the typical person, when you ask them, or when you say something about electroshock, they still do that. The average person doesn't even know that this is still being done to people. So what, you know, with the exception of, you know, whatever information that they have from the media or limited information, having a doctor with that authority come in and say this is, you know, your last resort and you must do this, and if you don't do it, you know, voluntarily, we'll have you forced into doing it, you know. And so, yeah, what kind of consent is there?
I would like to see this booklet. I'm looking for clip art that's going to draw attention to children's attention. Because if kids pick the booklets up, they're going to get more likely to get into the hands of the parents. in the doctor's offices or wherever wherever people sit and read, booklets in when you're waiting for your car to be repaired. They have magazines and booklets and anywhere that we can tap into. But design in such a way to make it attractive, to make people curious to what's in it.
Well, in addition to that, that's a really good idea. In addition to that, we need a major TV spot. Basically, that's where you reach the most number of people. Mm-hmm. And that requires millions of dollars.
If every one of us, if this was done in a Word document and was printable by anybody that wanted to bring it up, like I say, I printed out myself, maybe I printed out 100 of those, and I distribute them. Everybody across the country that has a printer that can print them out, fold them and staple them, if we were all printing them, that distribution, that money would be distributed in such a way that it would be minimal to print. It would not have to be done at a print shop.
I say the Office of Civil Rights should be disseminating this information. But I hear what you're saying, Lauren, and I think that's the other important piece. This is free. It is downloadable. It is printable. It is accessible to people to be able to get out there. And then as you were talking, I'm thinking, like, you can even turn it into, like, pictures and have it on Facebook of where you have, just an album with one fact on each page, on each picture made for each fact, and getting the information out to the general public. And I think that this is important. And I think that people, having a document that it would be free and shareable and printable, where people could leave them, where it was that they were going, the same way they leave other things and in these other places, non-psychiatric places, where there are just people who are there, who might be able to become interested by it. And I think that that's a really important goal. Really important.
I just want it to be attractive to the point that it's going to draw people in. I mean, if you look at some things that we look at, we're immediately turned off to. And if we can find the magic, it's kind of like a recipe. You get just the right amount of sugar and, just that right amount of flavoring, and people love it. But if you don't have just that little touch, the right recipe, they won't go back for seconds. But I'm looking at a way to really illustrate this to draw people of all ages.
I mean, and I think that one of the big challenges we have is when you think of the marketing, the billions of dollars that's put into the marketing schemes of psychiatry, and how they've boiled it down to, a simple little dot with a three-line, or three-word imagery, or they even use cartoons to convince people that these things will make them, feel better or whatever. Combating, on top of getting the truth out, it's also combating that very slick psychiatric messaging and marketing. It's like a double edge. It's not only getting people to understand that the information they're being given about electroshock isn't true, it's that the information that they're given about psychiatry isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's trying to get them to dispute their understanding. And so how do you do that in 0.03 seconds, when there's so many things that can assume somebody's attention what is the thing that is going to grab somebody's attention to pick up something and that it would be significant enough to be able to change their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's partially why having people who are survivors of electroshock speak out about it, and people to see who it is who's getting electroshocked, because I think they also have this idea in their head that it's somebody that doesn't really exist. And the fact that 70% of the people getting electroshocked are women, and very often women who are seniors or elderly, like, these are monstrous human rights violations that need to be stopped. They need to be ended.
Mm-hmm. Some of that has to be done legislated. We have to do that in our capitals. You know, my Capitol building in Lansing, Michigan, contacting those who are the lawmakers in every state. Some of those changes will only come about by getting into the legislation process. It's not easy, and it's long and drawn out. I want to see it happen yesterday.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that the government makes it even more difficult to, make it an open process as to how things are getting done. And the fact that the government and the FDA could have all of this information and still not be making a decision, and even having the audacity to say that they need more information, I mean, the public should just be up in arms with the FDA. It should be getting as much attention as the IRS or any of these other agencies, the same as with the Veterans Administration, the horrors that are being perpetrated on people, a thousand people dead, and the amount of malpractice suits that the VA has paid out. It just came out today, millions of dollars in malpractice suits committed on veterans. And, you know, the Murphy bill, H.R. 3717, I think is also something we really need to be worrying about. And in the text of it, they have this whole section around veterans and developing veteran treatment courts, where criminal, you know, quote unquote criminal justice, mental health and substance use services for people who are veterans who have been accused of a crime, as a way of averting incarceration, but now being mandated into mental health or substance use, quote-unquote, treatment. And the rate of electroshock, where they're actually implanting through a $70 million budget in DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, of the veterans, where they're implanting devices in the brains of veterans who are coming back with trauma, to be able to manipulate the electrical currents in their brains. And that this is the way that we are treating our veterans. People should be up in arms about what the society is doing, and that the FDA is behind all of this, allowing this to go on, allowing, device implants to be created and to get into our brains and control us. This is another major problem of how it's going to wind up, just growing and continuing, and things like the vagus nerve stimulator, or TMS being supported as legitimate issues when people have emotional responses to trauma or oppression or loss or other kinds of emotional things, that there's without a shred of evidence that there's something biological going on here. I think it's so criminal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm speechless. I become speechless. You know,
yeah.
I become speechless.
It really is a lot to overcome and to try to get one's head around of how do you get out from underneath this massive system that seems to have no problem rolling people over and not taking people seriously, seeing us as insignificant. Like Loretta, what you were saying before, that you know, you're untrained, you're discredited, you know, we're going to look to the manufacturers or the doctors and you know, you individuals who are, you know, who have survived this or are making this up, and you're not significant and you need to not be listened to. And the government should not be allowed to get away with treating its citizens like this. I mean, there's the human rights issue, but then there's like these constitutional rights kinds of things. And it is very overwhelming.
It's bad. It's difficult. It's hard. It really is hard to comprehend that this is allowed to be part of a free nation.
Well, I think what you're doing is fantastic, Loretta, and I think we can all join in and do it with you. And I also think before this, that Linda Andre wrote the most amazing book about all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
unfortunately, it never became a bestseller. But it only be this sort of thing needs huge amount of publicity.
Yeah, and it's
yes.
Doctors of
Deception.
Yeah, Doctors of Deception.
Well,
what they don't.
Yeah. It was an amazing.
See,
I would like to
reference all these things, Mind Freedom, Psych Rights, Mad in America. All of the different sources of information. I would like those referenced. People were they're referenced, but you they have to go looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Make a brief list it. At least list it in the website where
right.
they can
mm-hmm.
go and find the information.
Right.
They don't have to go in search of.
Right.
When I started my search, I was looking for anything or anybody that could tell me what happened to me. And I came across Mind Freedom International. That was my first ray of hope that I could understand what had happened. And
mm-hmm.
from there, I got involved, and I started looking and searching. But I want to make it easy to find these places. I don't want them hidden on a Amazon.com or something where you have to order it.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see it available, just
Great.
Totally available without cost. Print it off or print them off myself. Dorothy, you print some off.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren, I mean, all of us, we would start printing this off.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that that's the way to go. And I believe that Sue from the International Campaign to Ban Electroshock in Ontario, Canada, is on the line. Am I right about that, Sue?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. I just want to thank you all for doing such a good job. Sometimes I, in my work to abolish electroshock, I get despondent. But I remember something. If you tell one person, they tell 10 people. Those 10 people tell another 10 people. So
mm-hmm.
I know sometimes in my work I say, oh, I can't do this anymore. And then my husband says, you have to tell them because nobody should go through what you did. So that's what keeps me going. Like
mm-hmm.
I have my bad days and my good days, but my husband says, nobody should have to go through what you did, Sue. So my husband is my booster. Eh? Come on, Sue, you know. But I want to thank you for all your good work, Lauren. The radio show is fantastic. And Yvonne and Loretta and, okay, I have to remember the names of the people on the show tonight, okay? Please forgive
Deborah
me my memory.
Deborah and Dorothy.
It's Deborah and Dorothy and, okay, and if I forgot somebody, I'm sorry, but I think you're doing fantastic work and it has to be done because we've all had electroshock, I think, except Lauren, right? Except
that's right.
Lauren? Yeah, and
Laura is an honorary member.
Yes, yes. And this is such a terrible torture. I go to this every time with Lauren when I'm on the show. I call it psychiatric genocide. This has happened for the past 70 years or more by the killings of electroshock, by the psychiatric drugs and the body shocks. This has to stop, and I know we're all working, and I think you're all doing a fantastic job. I thought I'd say that. I'm sorry I came in late tonight, but I want to listen to this show because usually, you know, I have a bit of a hearing problem, so I want to hear this show, and I heard everything, and it was wonderful. It was so informative. I don't have all the answers. I guess we don't, but we have to keep plugging away, and I know that you do.
Well, I thank you for calling in, Sue, and everybody else. I think that there is such a wealth of information, and the people who are on this call tonight and all of the other people who are working to try to expose electroshock for the crime against humanity that it is, including people like Don White's and
yes.
Dr. Bonnie Burstow, and
yes.
Dr. Burstow is going to be on on June 26th on Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We have a special where we're going to be talking, or I'm going to have a conversation with her. People can call in, but we're going to talk about her work over the last 35 years or so as an anti-psychiatry activist in academia, and her work in calling attention to electroshock and how women are, you know, overly subjected to this, and feminist therapy, and her work on psychiatry and the business of madness, and the upcoming book that she's one of the co-editors or the first editor of with Brenda LaFrancois and Shandela Diamond, called Psychiatry Disrupted. And so there's a ton of information that we can put together out there. And Loretta, your goal of making this free and accessible for people, I respect and appreciate so much, because if you just don't know about it, unless you stumble over it, you don't even know to look for it.
Right.
And so, you know, and I think that that's one of the things that I've, you know, been very thankful for in my own life, that I stumbled over the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance when I was about 19. And so I was free from some of the messaging, and I got an alternative message early on. But I'll tell you, as recently as, you know, within the last few weeks, it was when I was telling somebody that there was going to be a show on electroshock, they said, oh, you had that, right? And this was somebody who would have known me when I was locked up when I was 15. And I said, not that I... So, you know, the idea that people thought that I had it is enough to make me wonder why my passion comes so deeply about this,
yeah.
And how much I see this as a crime against humanity and something that really needs to be ended. And the strength and survivorship of all of you ladies who speak out against it and who work so hard and to call attention to it in different ways, I think is just so amazing. And Dorothy, we're kind of at the end, but I'm wondering, would you just tell people, because we just started off with medical records, would you tell people what you did with your medical records?
Well, first of all, it was a long time ago when I got them. It was 1978 when I got them, and I'd been hospitalized in 1960 and 61. Very, very, very difficult to get those records, but I finally did get a lot of them. And what I did is I copied them all, I made everything out on my bed, cut out little pieces that I thought were particularly relevant, they were particularly horrible, that I hated what they said. And then I made a poster. I basically made a poster. It's called Behind Locked Doors. And I sell that poster now, and I give it away to people who have no money, and I sell it for $10 to people who can afford $10. And I had 1,000 made the first time. I sold them all, so there's 1,000 out there somewhere. And I just had 500 more printed the other day.
Oh,
and
wow.
So,
fabulous.
Yeah, and they look even better. The second batch looks even better because now they're digital and the whole process was much better. And so the latest version is really, really crispy clear. And, yeah, so I'm the word, it's basically educating people that this still goes on. And, yeah, that's what I did with it.
I think it's so, you know, important because somebody had mentioned earlier about how empowering it can be just to get your medical records and to
very
be able to
empowering.
Use them in those ways. And so, yeah,
it was very empowering. When I first came on the call, I'd just gotten home from work, but the little bit that I heard somebody referring to how they were asking for their records, and I say, my advice to anyone, not that you're asking my advice, but my advice is do whatever you need to do, whether it's just pretending that you had a tonsillectomy or whatever. Do whatever you need to do to get those records. You might have to be more polite than you ever, 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 ever want to be. Just get those records. And I think I heard somebody say that if you let them know it's psychiatric records, you're less likely, you're going to have to go through more hell to get them. So just basically break any rules, do whatever you need to do, lie, whatever, get the records. And then I just can't tell you how empowering it was. I still have them in a box in the top of my closet. I mean, I love those records. I just love having them. That's all I can say. It was very, 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 very empowering. And when I sell a poster, I feel absolutely like I was getting a PhD. Lauren?
It's an amazing piece of work. It really is. And the behind locked doors, it's such an amazing piece of work. Is there some place, Dorothy, where people can see it, get a glimpse of it, where
yes,
it's online?
Yes, you can see it online. It's psychrights.org. And I think you go over on the left-hand side of their website, maybe somewhere on the left-hand side of their website. Just click on maybe stories or whatever. It's on the left-hand side of their website. You click around, and then you get to my name and the name of the poster. And then you can read it on there.
I will make sure to get a link of it onto the Talk with Tenny page on Facebook. And so I thank you for talking about that, and maybe someday in the future, like, you can talk a little bit about narrative and what that's like of putting together and really voicing your story and how, you know, creatively and talking about how to do this through artistic and creative means a little bit, and maybe we can have a show focusing on how people are using creativity in order to do these. But I also, Sue, it's my understanding the International Campaign to Ban Electroshock has a new website.
Yes, it does. And I'm going to give you, I'm going to give you the URL. It's easy because I made it short this time. ICBE.YOLA, Y-O-L-A site, SITE.com. It's only a three-page website. It has me, my husband, a few protests, a few videos. The second page is Contact Us, a form, and the third page is the ECT facts. And I have the book by Linda Andre, all the ECT facts, and my poem about me having ECT. There's only three pages.
Great.
Long page.
And, Deborah, people can reach you and find out information about that survey at ectjustice.com.
Yes.
And Loretta, pretty soon we're going to be having a free downloadable, print as many as you can and get them out as many places as you can, booklet from you called...
Electroconvulsive therapy. It's actually entering the gray zone.
entering the gray zone, and and so we'll keep watch on that, and I definitely will keep in touch with you, and I'll send you some references too. I want to thank everybody for calling in. We have about 8 seconds left. I just want to let people know if you need to reach me, 718-273-8708. Thanks. Have a great night. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Everybody.